Welcome to the Hot Chocolate Recruitment Podcast, the Hot Chocolate Recruitment Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is Steve Scotland from Hot Chocolate Recruitment. Today marks a very special day for me. It's my very first interview for Hot Chocolate Recruitment's podcast. Today we've got a pretty special guest. Today I'm interviewing a fellow by the name of Jack Cosgrove. Jack's a friend of mine who's a wildlife ranger in Queensland, North Queensland, Australia. Previous to that, Jack used to work in Australia Zoo, owned by Steve Irwin. Jack's got a pretty unique role. He catches crocodiles and wildlife, and he's got a couple of good tales to tell as well. I know Jack through another life. I used to coach Jack's football team, and being the new kid on the block, I really didn't know any of the guys and their backgrounds, but one day I tuned into a conversation where Jack was telling the guys that that day he jumped on a 5-metre crocodile. So pretty interesting stories. Hope you enjoy the listen. Visit my blog and my webpage at www.hotchoc.com.au or Facebook, and enjoy the show. Jack Cosgrove, welcome to the show. I've been looking forward to this for a very long time. Mate, can you give the listeners a bit of a story about what you're doing at the moment?
So at the moment, I'm based up in Cairns and I'm a wildlife ranger. So we're involved in the management of native wildlife in the northern part of the state. So that varies from working with crocodiles and cassowaries and flying foxes and wallabies. And basically, if it's native wildlife, good chance we're going to deal with it on to some degree.
Jobs out there, like I know there's a lot of podcasts out there that are business centric. You know, like interviewing yep. Interviewing people who own businesses that are doing well, and you hear that you hear of people who own businesses and oh, you know, he's doing well, he's killing it. But you don't really hear of too many people being interviewed about what sort of role and what sort of job they have. So that's why I yep. wanted to talk to you, because you do have a pretty cool job. So. And I'll just, I guess, from a person, you know, who's coming out of school, or even a person who, you know, sits in the office all day, I'll give them a bit of perspective of what's out there, you know, the greater world outside their office. So you're currently, so you're working in Cairns at the moment. So how did you yep. get to that position? Give us the story.
Okay, so basically, I guess I was like anybody else. I sort of finished school and didn't really know what I wanted to do. I sort of always had a bit of a, you know, like I was always quite active and loved the outdoors, so I always had a bit of a passion for the environment. I did the whole left school, went and travelled for a few years and did that thing. And I guess I came back and I sort of decided, you know, I tried a few different things. I sort of started an electrical apprenticeship and did a few little things like that. And I sort of, you know, decided to go to uni. So I initially went to university and started environmental planning, and I guess as far as the major sort of turning point to sort of getting to where I was now was getting a job at Australia Zoo. So I got I sort of fell into it to a certain degree. I was at the stage I was working at a sports complex and just at the swimming pool, and you know, just your sort of general university job. And I got a job at Australia Zoo just doing maintenance. Did that for sort of about 3 months, they sort of came to me with a proposal, and it was sort of a bit of a dream come true, and just a great opportunity. So I guess I sort of got my foot in the door by I was just doing maintenance, and I guess at the time I didn't really realise, but there was people probably assessing my attitude and my personality. I guess a lot of wildlife jobs, people sort of really do assess your personality. You know, working with animals, it's I guess you have to have the right temperament and the right attitude and personality. So they sort of said, look, would I be interested in doing a little bit of work with crocodiles? And obviously I jumped at it, and it kind of went from there. You initially start working with small alligators and little crocodiles, and I guess it sounds like one of those sort of glamorous jobs, but like anything, there's definitely a lot of hard work, and it's a lot of dirty work, a lot of cutting up meat and mowing lawns, and especially in a zoo. So I sort of did that, and over about a 5-year period, I sort of worked my way up, and you start sort of, you know, working with or feeding smaller crocodiles, and the zoo have basically have a sign-off system, so you sort of start off for the safer end, and then you slowly work your way up to the more dangerous end. And you know, after about 3 years, you're doing shows and talking on demonstrations and feeding big crocs. And I was also really fortunate. I got to go away quite a few times with the zoo on their research trips in Cape York in North Queensland. So that gave me some really good experience with actually catching wild crocodiles, which was probably the sort of key skill I got that really helped me secure the position I've got now. So after about 5 years, I guess I was looking for a bit of a change, and as great as it was working in a zoo, it's apart from when we were away doing trips, when you're at the zoo, it's very routine. So every day is very similar. Your day is dictated by going to different shows, and you've obviously got a list of jobs that need to be done every day. So after about 5 years, I think I was ready for a bit of a change, and I wanted to expand my knowledge and sort of, you know, test the waters in other areas. So I basically came up to Cairns on about a 2-month contract. So I came up here and had a contract for 2 months, and I did about 12 months of just this contract, just kept getting renewed, sort of short-term renewals, and eventually, had a couple of interviews and worked my way up to where I am now. So now I'm still on a contract, on a 3-year contract, which is obviously a lot more secure than the shorter ones I was on.
All right.
That's basically how I got in.
So environmental science. So you went to Sunshine Coast University.
Yep.
So sitting down in the lectures and listening to your lecturers tell you about the environment, how mountains were formed and clouds and whatnot, did you ever sit there and think to yourself, I'm gonna catch crocodiles? Like, talk us through how you've enrolled in university, but what did you hope to get out of it, out of the course? I'm assuming it's like a 3 to 4 year course. What did you hope to get out of the end of it, besides a job? What did you want to get into?
I guess university was one of those things for me where I got to a stage where I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and it was one of those, just went from the decision for me to go to uni was one of those things where I've always felt like I wanted something formal, you know, some sort of formal qualification, and I didn't go to uni thinking I've got a definite job I want to do as a result of it. I kind of went to uni because I felt like university was part of that process of sort of narrowing down where I wanted to be, but I definitely never thought I'd be catching crocodiles and feeding crocodiles and doing things like that when I was sitting in a lecture. And
what did
and,
you think
going through...
when you're at university, did you think you were going to be a ranger? Did you think about you'd work for the council, or you'd work for the state government researching, the feral cat problem or something? You know, what did you want to do after as a job? What did you want to do after uni?
I guess originally I was probably more interested in the marine side of things. I obviously growing up on the Sunshine Coast and always had a bit of a passion for the environment in general. But I guess, you know, the ocean and the marine environment was probably always a soft spot or something I really had a genuine desire for. And working with crocodiles was never something that I could foresee when I was, you know, sitting there going through university. But I'm not really sure. I mean, I guess originally I sort of thought to myself it'd be great to get a council job, start getting that experience. But I never really had, you know, I never really had a... I guess over the course of university, I kind of, at the very start, I kind of had no idea. I just wanted an environmental job. And then by the end of it, I was it was very different. By the end of it, I was working full time at Australia Zoo. I was part of their research programs. I was doing trips with the University of Queensland, and I guess I always found, you know, I did some of it full time, I did some of it part time, and so I studied for about 4.5 years, and over that 4.5 years, I really felt like it was this progression. There wasn't as though one day I didn't know what I wanted to do, and then halfway through uni I went, yep, I decided, and then I wanted to do it. It was this slow progression where I slowly sort of narrowed down the field I wanted to be in.
Okay, cool. All right, so working in the role that you're doing now, what would you suggest someone who's sort of finishing school or someone who's looking for a change of career, what's the pathways that you would suggest that they take?
I've sort of sat there and had this conversation before with different colleagues, and everyone's got their own pathway and their own way that you know they sort of got into what we do now. I guess working in a zoo, it gives you great exposure to the husbandry side of working with animals. But in saying that, you know, there's other guys that have a real permit background, or there's other guys that might have a real sort of practical or policy writing background. So everyone that I work with now, we've all sort of got into this through different avenues. I guess the only advice I could sort of think to give to someone, especially being younger, I guess you got to make some of those sacrifices. And for me, you know, when I first came up to Cairns, I sort of came up here on a bit of a whim. It was a two-month contract, and I was living in Cairns. I was driving an hour and a half to work every day. Most people that I sort of speak to now that have sort of got into a position, you know, like got into that sort of, you know, I guess you sort of look at, some people look at it as being a bit of a dream job. You always look back and somewhere in the past, and they've always had to move away somewhere they didn't want to, or they've had to do a big commute to work, or they've had to do a job they didn't want to do for two or three years to get the experience before they could sort of move in. So I guess that'd be my advice. Don't be afraid to do something you don't want to do, or, you know, to get to the position you want to be in. It's, like I said, most of the people that I work with now, everyone's had to sort of make sacrifices and, you know, sometimes, you know, for some people it was, they had to sit in an office in Brisbane for 2 years writing policies, which probably isn't the most exciting job, but it gives them that exposure and that experience. And the other really good bit of advice I'd ever give to someone, if they want to get into, especially government jobs, the more practice you get with interviews, the better you'll be. The interview process for some of these government jobs is very, very different to any other job interview you'll ever be. The panel interviews are really, it's a real process, and it's, the more you can do, the more experience you get, the better you'll be. I know the first panel interview I did sort of, wasn't that great, but every single one I've done since, I've just got better and better. So that'd be my advice if, especially with the government, the panel interviews are quite, it can be quite nerve-wracking, and the more you do, the better you'll be.
All right, that's good advice, mate. Look, if I was to... Okay, so where you're at the moment, do you have to have a uni degree? So we'll get into what you do on a day-to-day basis in a minute, but in terms of someone being, you know, wanting to work towards what you've got, do you have to have a uni degree? Because you've touched on the formal side of the job in terms of, you know, the process that you have to go through in order to win the role. It's a lot different. There's a lot of process, a lot of procedure. Do you have to go to uni?
No, you definitely don't have to. I mean, I work with guys that are, above me in a position that don't have university degrees. So it's definitely not a requirement. The one thing I think it does help in the sense that it teaches you that formal sort of writing procedure, and it does teach you how to research, which I've found very beneficial, especially in this role. It's a bit more office-based than when I was working at the zoo. But in saying that, I think you do have to have writing skills. You do have to be able to read and process a report and all that sort of thing. But as far as having a degree, it's definitely not a requirement.
Okay, all right. Well, like I said, we'll touch on the zoo and the jumping on the crocs and all that sort of stuff in a minute. But can you give us a bit of a breakdown on your day to day? I know at the moment you're doing a course, a coxswain course, but you know, your typical day, what does that involve?
I guess that's one of the things I really love about this job is you'll get there in the morning thinking you've got your day all planned out, and it can change with a phone call, or it can change hour to hour. So a typical day, you know, we'll do permit assessments. So we'll go out and We'll assess different permits that people are applying for. Depending on, we do animal or wildlife surveys, so you might have crocodile surveys or you might be doing cassowary surveys. So I guess I'd probably break up my job into, I guess it works out being about 50-50, so it's sort of half in the field, half in the office. But in saying that, you'll have times when you're out in the field for 2 weeks straight. And like I said, it can vary greatly day to day. So it's one of those jobs you'll sort of come in there in the morning and you never quite know what's going to happen. You might get a phone call and you might be in the car driving up to Cave York somewhere that afternoon. So I guess it's exciting as well. It's one of those jobs where you're never quite sure what the day's going to pan out or how the day's going to pan out.
Yeah, okay. One other question. Are you one of these guys who goes out on the boat looking for people who are fishing in banned areas?
No, I don't. No, so most of that is all carried out by marine parks, and marine parks falls under Queensland Parks and Wildlife.
Yep.
And you've got your boating and fisheries, and you've got your other different government organisations that look after that.
Awesome. All right. Well, that's good to know. All right. One other question. In terms of where you've been, if we think about that, where do you want to be? So the next step for you in your career, where do you want to go? And is there anywhere in the world or even in Australia that you think that you would love to do as a job?
Where do I want to be? I mean, I suppose there's a few sort of more boxes I want to tick where I'm in the position I'm in at the moment. I've got, like I mentioned earlier, I've got a couple of courses I'm doing, a coxswain's course, and I'm sort of at the process of, I guess I'm at that stage now where I've kind of got to the end of that initial sort of learning phase and hopefully I'm moving into that next phase where I can start, teaching other people some of the skills I've got. That's a long process. That doesn't happen, overnight, but I'm starting to get to that stage now where instead of, for a crocodile capture, for example, instead of turning up and sort of being involved and doing all the jumping, I guess I'm starting to move into that phase where I kind of organise the process and it's a bit more hands-off. You sort of sit back, but it's probably more stressful than jumping on the crocodile because you've got, instead of just worrying about yourself, you're worrying about 10 other people that are involved in the process. So that's sort of where I'm at now. I'm, sort of starting to get into that role where it's some of the sort of hands-on. I might not be jumping on the head of a crocodile, but you're kind of organising people and what they call a team leader. So you're basically leading the process and it's sort of one of those things where it's very nerve-wracking, but it's also very rewarding. And it's great too. I guess for years I was when I was involved in crocodile capture, you're so focused on what you're doing. It's been great to sit back and be involved and teaching people and leading a process where you get to see the excitement that other people get out of it. So that's sort of probably where I'm at the moment. I'm just starting that process where, probably taking a bit more of a hands-off role, but like I said, it's still definitely got its challenges. And instead of worrying about, what you're doing and what part of the croc you're jumping on and what rope you're pulling on, you're kind of a bit hands-off, but you're worried about 10 other people and what they're doing.
Okay, no worries. All right, well let's have some fun with this. All right, so this is where it gets interesting, and I guess all the office listeners tune in because this is the fun bit. Firstly, Steve Irwin. Tell us about Steve Irwin. You worked with him for a bit, before he passed away at the Australia Zoo. What was he like, and how long did you work with him for?
I never actually worked with Steve. I started Australia Zoo about 6 months after he passed away.
Yep.
So I guess I was really lucky. I got taught how to work with crocodiles by people that had worked with Steve for years and years. I'd definitely heard a lot of stories and I got to work with Terry and Bindi and Robert quite closely over the years that I was there. From what I've heard, I think he was a really intense kind of character. He was one of those people that, I think he only slept for about 4 hours every night. He was, it was all sort of go, go, go. He was, I think he was one of those people, he was tough but fair. From the stories I've heard, he expected a lot, but he was, he also sort of gave a lot. He never expected people to do something that he wasn't prepared to do himself.
Okay. All right. Mate, you're jumping on crocodiles. Now, this is what I don't understand. This is what I'm trying to get my head around. You're jumping on crocodiles. When we first met, when I was first involved with the football team and you're in there and you're talking about sitting on the back of this croc and it was like sitting on the bonnet of a car or the roof of a car. What's the biggest croc you've ever caught?
Well, I actually remember that night quite well, and that was that football training that night. It was a Tuesday night, and it was after we'd had a film. We had an injured crocodile at the zoo we had to catch, and the crocodile we caught that day was a crocodile that he measured about, I think it was about 15 foot 2 inches, so I'm not sure that works out in meters, but big crocodile, and he was missing about a foot of his tail, so you'd imagine he'd be about a 16-foot crocodile, so I think that's about 5 meters. That's getting up there. That's one of the biggest crocodiles, and he's the scariest crocodile I've ever fed, scariest crocodile I've ever worked with.
So what do you mean feed? Like, you're holding, what, the chicken on a piece of, like, stick or something? What do you mean feed? Like, how do you do it? Like, give us a visual on how you feed these crocs.
That particular crocodile, he was an off-display crocodile, so generally, what used to happen at the zoo, you'd have this sign-off sheet, so you'd learn on the easier crocodiles to feed, and then you'd get signed off by an individual crocodile. This particular crocodile, he wasn't even on the list. He was the very end of the extreme. You had to work there for about 4 years before you were allowed to get in there and feed him. He was scary. He'd sit there in this pond and he'd sort of do this big launch out, and I was holding a chicken or a bit of meat or whatever it was, and he was one of those crocodiles that he'd come out, and as you were feeding him, you kind of couldn't. He didn't look at the food. A lot of crocodiles look at the food, and you drop the food in their mouth as they're sort of launching up. He'd come running, storming out of the water. He'd have a big launch at you, and the idea was to get the food in between you and him, so it hit the food while he was trying to get you. That's pretty much how that works.
All right, okay. So the visual that I've got now, I've been out to the zoo, and it's not all concrete. So around these ponds and pools that these crocs sit in all day is grass, and you touched on that one of your first jobs at the zoo was, you're mowing grass. It's not just mowing grass out the front in the reception area. It's mowing the grass, in the enclosures and stuff like that. I'm seeing it's raining. It's a rainy day, and Jack Cosgrove's got this dead chicken. He's got this dead chicken, and he's got a 5 metre croc that wants to cut him in half. Now, were you ever worried that you're going to, throw this chicken and then take a big step back and slip over, and you're on the ground, and here's this 5 metre croc sitting on top of you?
I think it's one of the, like I said before, I was really lucky. I was trained by people that had been doing it for a very long time, and I guess all those things when, you sort of think, you get, I guess it's like, any croc, any working with crocodiles, a bit like a game of footy, you get those natural nerves, but the more you do it, the more confident you get. But I'd be lying if I said you lost those nerves. Those nerves, I haven't lost them yet, and I don't imagine I ever will. I think too, as far as slipping over and everything that can potentially go wrong, it's one of those things where you think about it while you're not doing it, but as soon as you get in there and you start focusing on what you're doing, I think you don't think about anything. I can't ever remember feeding a crocodile and having another thought in my head. It's one of those things that I think naturally just all your attention gets drawn to what you're doing, and I guess subconsciously you're probably focusing on things that you don't realise you are. As you're walking back, and I've sort of seen video of myself feeding a crocodile, and I was along a fence line. I didn't even realise I used to do it. I'd have the food up in one hand, and with my other hand I'd just be running along the fence, so I knew that I was an arm width away from the fence. So things like that where you're doing something subconsciously and you don't even realise it. I think it just, all your attention and all your focus is so centralised on what you're doing. Those other little things don't really enter your thought process.
All right, okay. Now, what about up in Cairns? I was up in Cairns a little while ago, as you know, for a wedding, and I was a bit sort of stunned by the river system through Cairns. It was there was crocs everywhere and whatnot. So you go out and you trap, trap crocs and whatnot. Like, how scary is that? Like, tell us about what's it like setting a trap and then coming back a day later and you see that it's been tripped and here's this dinosaur sitting in it.
I think setting crocodile traps is one of those things where it's actually quite hard work. And we used to do a fair bit at the zoo where we'd be setting traps for 4 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks straight. And it's one of, setting a crocodile trap, it takes quite a long time, and there's a lot of thought process goes into it. And you got to take a lot of things into consideration. We were doing one the other day where you've got to take into consideration the tide, you've got to take into consideration the wind, and whereabouts it is. Does it look like a natural bit of habitat? If you stick a trap in the middle of nowhere, a crocodile is naturally going to be a bit wary of that. You need to sort of put them in places where, when we look for a spot to put a trap, we use Google Earth images. We'll go out on the river, you'll drive past, you'll survey big sections of the river trying to find this perfect little place to put a trap. So there's a lot of hard work goes with setting a trap, and it's really fiddly. You'll have tie-off points and you have anchors, and you're continually adjusting those tie-off points to your bank or to your anchors for you might do it half a foot, then you've got to adjust another one. So there's a lot of work involved with it. So when you set that trap and then you go there the next day and you see that it's actually worked and a crocodile's gone in there, it's really quite rewarding. But I guess it's quite short-lived. You'll get there and there's almost this sense of relief. Yep, I've set this trap and it's caught a crocodile. Like I said, that's short-lived because then you've got to deal with the crocodile and then you've got to process it. So all of a sudden you get this new wave of nerves and this... a whole totally different job starts taking over what you're thinking. You've got to think about, okay, how many people have we got yet? Where are we going to pull it out of the trap? How big is it? What equipment have we got? So like I said, setting a trap, it's hard work and it is rewarding when you do see that they do work. But yeah, once you've seen that there's a crocodile in there, then it's a whole new ball game, and you've got something else to think about.
All right, you spoke about resources and the equipment that you've got on hand. You once told me a story where you had the croc in the back of a tinny, and were you driving around with it, with this croc?
as far as research goes, there's a lot of different ways to catch a crocodile. You've got different traps. There's different methods of hand catching crocodiles. So I've been involved a few times where we might use noosing poles where you lean out. If you go at night time and you shine a bright light on a crocodile's eyes, you get this really big, really quite powerful orangey red glow. So you know where they are, and then it's all about sneaking up on them. So, quite often you'll sneak up, you'll get the noose pole around this crocodile, and then you've got to somehow get it in the boat. So it's very different to, I guess the difference is when you're in a boat, once you've got the rope on, you're committed and you've got to pull the crocodile in the boat and you've got to deal with it. And you don't really have the luxury when you catch a crocodile in a trap, you pull it onto land. If something goes wrong, quite often you can step back or you can tie the ropes off and you can reassess and change how you want to do things. When you're getting a croc straight out of the water into a boat, it all happens in a split second. And you do have to make decisions, and in the blink of an eye, you're going to do this or this goes wrong or that rope gets tangled up. So I think things change very, very quickly. But it's quite a unique experience driving back in the boat, laying on a crocodile.
All right, okay. What's the dumbest thing you've ever seen? Like, I can imagine there's rookies involved. Even out at the zoo, there's things that people shouldn't be doing, and you just think to yourself, you should not be doing that because that is really, really dangerous. What's the dumbest thing you've ever seen?
Oh, I guess one of the things about crocodiles, and someone once told me when I first started, you don't have, it's not the first, when you first start working with crocodiles, that's not the most dangerous time. The most dangerous time is when you've been doing it for a year or two and a bit of that complacency can sneak in. I guess I'm really fortunate that I work with a really professional team now who I've learned a lot of and who've definitely got their head screwed on. In the past, I guess I've seen people do some silly things. I've seen people walk out in front and try and pick up, bits of rubbish or clean a pond and I guess making assumptions. That's the worst thing you can ever do when you're working with crocodiles is make an assumption. I've seen people sort of walk out on the edge of a pond and just assume that the crocodile was somewhere else because that's where they saw it 10 minutes ago and it hadn't moved, all day. And I guess I've seen people do things like that. And I've actually saw a story in, it was in the Northern Territory, and I guess it wasn't so much stupid, it was more so someone who's very lucky, but he was cleaning, he'd been hunting, and he was cleaning some pigs they'd caught, and he was in, you know, into his knees in the water, and his dog was on the bank, and this crocodile put a big hit on the other side of him and grabbed his dog, and he was in the water, and the crocodile was on the bank between him and the land, and actually see him out to stumble over the crocodile to get to safety.
Oh.
So I when I saw that, I thought that guy needs to buy a lotto ticket.
Okay, all right.
Didn't see that person. I saw that. That was a sort of third hand. I saw that, a video of that. But yeah, one of those things where I guess it was his lucky day. But like I said, you know, you see people that, you know, not so much do silly things, but it's like anything, people make mistakes. It's just knowing that when the certain occasion, well, certain time, you can't afford to make mistakes. So it's knowing that difference, knowing you're involved in, you know, something where, okay, you know, you really have to focus, and you can't afford to sort of not have your mind on the job.
Yeah. Okay. Cassowaries. Talk to me about cassowaries. Cassowaries are one of the largest birds, you know, in the world, and being up in Cairns, you'd have to probably deal with a couple. Have you ever wrestled one? How does it work?
Yeah.
You have to remove a cassowary, do you chase it down and then tackle it around its ankles or something? No. How do you do it?
Not quite like that. Cassowary's one of those things that I guess it was never something I'd ever thought I'd ever work with, and it wasn't until I moved up here that, you know, I was sort of in this job that, you know, we do deal with them. Basically, for those people that know, they look a little bit like an emu. They're a big flightless bird. Difference is they've got a big sort of an inner claw, which they call a dagger claw, which, you know, they jump up and they can kick out with it. So most of the time they're not aggressive, but they do have that potential to be aggressive. So, you know, as far as from a management point of view, as far as what we do with cassowaries, normally we've got injured birds. So if there's an injured bird, we may have to catch them. It's definitely something different. Quite often, you know, when we can, we'll try and sedate that animal. It obviously makes the job a lot safer for us, but I guess more importantly, it relaxes that animal a lot more. So if we can do something a lot quicker, that's most of the time that's going to be better for that animal, because it reduces the amount of stress they're under. But they're an amazingly powerful animal. Laying on a cassowary and restraining it and holding onto its legs, and it's amazing. If you don't have that leg out straight, if you've sort of got it in where then what's sort of their knees sort of cocked back, you know, you pretty much can't hold onto them. The amount of power they've got is quite amazing.
Have you ever thought about concocting like a trap like Arnold Schwarzenegger did in Predator? When they get all these vines together and then they trap the predator in like that net. Have you ever thought about doing something like that with the cassowaries?
Well, I think most the problem with cassowaries is they're one of those animals. A crocodile will go into a trap and, you know, and they're a very tough, resilient animal, and they might sort of nose the trap, and quite often once they realise they're caught, they'll sort of sit there and, you know, they won't sort of do too much. Sometimes they sort of make a bit of mess of the trap, but a cassowary is one of those animals where they've got that really sort of that nature where they're kind of really highly strung, and you know, if you try to trap a cassowary and you're not there to monitor it, or you're not trying to make the process as quick as possible, it can really harm the animal. So the biggest problem we get with cassowaries is when they accidentally go into pig traps. You know, a cassowary will get in there and it knows it needs to get out. So they'll sort of really hurt themselves trying to get out of that trap. So as far as trapping goes, it's not something we really do, and it's not something, I guess, I sort of thought too much about the way we do it at the moment. You know, we'll sort of sometimes we might lure the bird with a bit of food, or sometimes we'll sneak up on it depending on the situation, and we'll sort of position ourselves so we're safe, but also so, you know, if we're on the edge of a cliff, we don't want to sort of scare a cassowary so it falls down. We don't want to scare it so it runs onto a main road, anything like that. So whenever we're sort of planning a cassowary capture, we take all those things into consideration. So, you know, if it's in someone's backyard, we'll try and sort of corner to an area where it can't hurt itself, and obviously somewhere where it's safe for us, so we've, you know, so we've got access. You know, we can actually do what we need to do.
All right, snakes, Jack. Anyone who knows me knows that I'm absolutely petrified of snakes because I think it's because I just don't understand them. They're just not natural to me. There's something not natural about snakes. And when I see a snake, I've walked in the Australia Zoo and seen the tiger snakes and the browns and it's freaky. So I'd imagine you've handled a few snakes in time. Have you ever caught a wild snake? Like a snake in the wild or in a trap or had to relocate a snake?
No, not really. I've handled some captive snakes in the past that have been fairly aggressive. I've obviously seen snakes in the wild and I guess they're one of those animals that, you know, I've never seen a snake actually turn around and chase a person or try and attack a person. I've only ever seen snakes react when they're backed into a corner and it's more of a self-defense mechanism. But to be honest with you, I'd catch a 5-meter crocodile over a snake any day. I've handled captive snakes before and venomous snakes, and they're one of those animals where I'm confident that I can do it, but you know, I sweat bullets whenever I'm dealing with a snake. It's probably doesn't come as natural as what, say, working with a crocodile does.
I agree with you.
I can definitely understand that. You know, sort of people that fear them and things like that. I guess it's like you said, it's a lack of understanding. It's, you know, most snakes and most animals, not all the time, but a lot of the time with animals, if you leave them alone, they're going to leave you alone. So, you know, if you back a snake into a corner, it's going to try and get away. If it can't get away and its last resort is to defend itself, and that's what it may do. But, yeah, like I said, I've worked with people that are really, really good and they're so confident and calm when they're working with snakes. Whenever I have to do it, it's one of those things where I definitely sweat bullets. It's quite nerve-wracking. Like I said, I'd take a 5-meter croc over a snake any day.
All right, confirm this. One of Katrina's friends, my wife Katrina, one of her friends, her mother was walking in Canberra, walking the dog in the forest somewhere, and a brown snake bit her, and she went into hospital because she was feeling really, really ill. And is it right? Am I right in saying that you can only take anti-venom once in your life, and it doesn't work the second time?
I'm not 100% sure on the science behind it, but my knowledge of anti-venom is it's not real good for you. I think generally speaking with anti-venom, they'll only give it to you if they really need to, and I think that, you know, there can be some side effects. I think if you're continually getting anti-venom, I don't think it's real good for you. I have heard sort of stories that, you know, it can reduce your life expectancy a little bit if you're continually having it. And I'm not 100% sure on the details of it, but I think too, if you're given anti-venom, there's a time period where you've really got to be careful, because if you get bitten by that snake, same type of snake again, it can be quite harmful. I guess the moral of the story is, you know, prevention's better than cure.
Yeah, snakes. Anyway, look, I'll tell you a story. It's my turn to tell you a story. One of my friends, his wife is a school teacher, and the school took the kids for an excursion somewhere, and it was quite a long drive. And anyway, they've stopped halfway on the way home. They've stopped halfway in a park somewhere so the young kids could go to the toilet. And they're all primary school age, so they're pretty young, and they've all gone on the toilet, and there's boys and girls and whatnot, so all the girls use the girls' toilets. Anyway, the teachers went last, and the teacher who went second last, and mind you, there's probably about 30-odd girls who use this toilet. The teacher who went second last, she came out to the teacher who was waiting and said, "Have a look at this." And they walked into the toilet, had a look at the bowl, and there was a brown snake coiled in the inside of the toilet bowl. And they knew that there was 30-odd kids had used that toilet. Have you ever heard stories like that?
I haven't heard that one. I guess I've heard a few sort of, you know, different ones, and you know, you'll hear stories about you know, especially with snakes and crocodiles, anything that's sort of a little bit dangerous, you'll hear sort of lucky escapes where, you know, someone will say that, you know, they went swimming or they were swimming somewhere and then 2 days later there was a big crocodile seen there and things like that. But Oh, that's a good one, isn't it? Kids, 30 yeah. kids walking past a brown snake.
Well, they sat on that toilet.
Sitting right there, yeah.
Anyway, all right, so what's the coolest thing you've seen, mate? Like, obviously, everyone now knows now that you've got a pretty unique job, seeing pretty cool stuff. What's the coolest thing you've seen that makes the job worthwhile?
Oh, that's a tough one. I guess the most enjoyable part about it for me is the trips I've got to do away, and obviously I've done quite a few trips in Cape York. You know, that's something that's, I guess you sort of got to pinch yourself when you wake up and you're in the middle of nowhere. You don't have phone reception, you know. You don't no point carrying a wallet because there's not a shop just around the corner. You're in one of the more remote parts of Australia, and I guess sort of waking up and being in that environment is something pretty special. And, you know, like I said, you've got to pinch yourself when you sort of realise you're getting paid to do that. Coolest thing I guess some of the crocodile captures I've seen have been, I guess, pretty full on. I've seen some crocodiles really sort of test this out, for lack of a better word. I've seen a crocodile come out of a trap and get completely on its side, and it was completely mid-air putting up a fight. Working at the zoo every day, you probably take for granted some of the cool things you get to see. I was really lucky because, you know, I get to work with crocodiles and I was really passionate about that. But also, you know, going in and, you know, someone can use their hand to fix a pump or do something, and you're walking past tigers and got to go and, you know, pat elephants and see baby rhinos and all sorts of things like that. So I guess it's a hard question. It's a hard one to narrow down to one example. But I guess the most enjoyable thing I've done in my role over the last sort of 6 years would definitely be the trips I've done in Cape York.
Cool. All right, mate. In closing, do you ever see yourself... are you one of those guys that in Thailand, the croc farms in Thailand that put their heads in the crocodile's mouth? Do you see yourself as one of those guys?
No, I definitely draw the line of that.
What about the guys who teach those elephants in Chiang Mai how to paint pictures and kick soccer balls?
I've seen some people, especially the zoo, I've seen elephants do some pretty amazing things, but... Yeah, I'm not too sure if that's up my alley. I think I might stick to what I know.
Jack Cosgrove, thanks for joining Hot Chocolate Recruitment's podcast. The first interviewee, mate, you've done really well. Thank you.
Not a problem, anytime.
Cool.